I first want to begin with a reading from the Gospel of Matthew from chapter 26. Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over yonder and pray." And taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as thou wilt." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch, and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, for the second time, he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, thy will be done." And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were heavy. So leaving them again, he went away and prayed for the third time, saying the same words. Then he came to the disciples and said to them, "Are you still sleeping and taking your rest? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand." This morning, I'd like to return to the words of the Second Vatican Council that I began with back on Friday evening, those words from the passage on the universal call to holiness. Again, the Church Fathers say that in the Church, everyone, whether belonging to a hierarchy or being cared for by it, is called to holiness, according to the saying of the Apostle, "For this is the will of God, your sanctification." However, this holiness of the Church is unceasingly manifested and must be manifested in the fruits of grace, which the Spirit produces in the faithful. It is expressed in many ways in individuals who in their walk of life tend toward the perfection of charity, thus causing the edification of others. In a very special way, this holiness appears in the practice of the councils, customarily called evangelical. It's these last words that have been a particular interest of mine for the past 20 years, where, again, the Council Fathers say, in a very special way, this holiness appears in the practice of the councils, customarily called evangelical. Holiness and the perfection of charity are revealed in a special way through the evangelical councils. And I believe that these words of the Second Vatican Council are teaching that not only everyone is not only called to holiness and the perfection of charity, everyone's called to those, but to be able to live this holiness, to be able to live this perfection of charity, everyone is also called to the evangelical councils. Now, if you asked most people, they would not be able to tell you what an evangelical council is. And so if you're wondering, well, what are those things? If you're not certain, that's okay. Actually, the word evangelical council, I need to distinguish. I've been talking about councils and councils, and you may think, well, what's the difference? When I talk about the Second Vatican Council, it's spelled with a C-I-L, and it refers to a meeting, a large meeting, whether it be of bishops or other people, a council. But the council, ends with an S-E-L, It refers to advice. Think like a guidance counselor at a high school, or let's say a counselor that works with you regarding just issues you might be dealing with. That counsel refers to advice, or suggestions, or recommendations. And then evangelical, of course, refers to the gospel. And so the evangelical counsels are gospel advice. And so maybe another way to think about it is many religious, whether it be nuns or like the Marian Sisters up the hill, friars, they take vows of the evangelical counsels. And customarily, they take vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. That these are the customary evangelical counsels. And so what the council fathers are saying, I believe, is that everyone, in order to live this call to holiness, everyone, in order to grow in the perfection of charity, is called to live poverty, chastity, and obedience. And for many, this may seem pretty unconventional, this idea that I'm called to poverty, I'm called to obedience, chastity. However, just to show that I'm not unique in my thinking, I want to share the words of an intervention, or actually a suggestion made by one of the bishops at the Second Vatican Council as they were writing Lumen Gentium, that the documents of the Second Vatican Council didn't just sort of boop, come out of nowhere. But rather, there were drafts made. There were discussions amongst committees. It was brought before the greater number of bishops. They offered their interventions. They offered their suggestions. These were taken and then recrafted. And then after a long period of drafting, the final product was voted upon by the Council Fathers. And in one of the interventions, this one bishop says that, finally, it is right, therefore, to place forth the three evangelical counsels, that it may be shown that they are able to be and ought to be observed, not only in the monastery, but also that a life in the spirit of the evangelical counsels is recommended by Christ for the faithful in all times, living according to the condition of each one's status. And this is recommended to better attain our supernatural end. Recommended so that we can go to heaven. And this council father who made this intervention, Bishop Carol Wojtyła, would later repeat this idea 30 years later when he was pope. In his document, actually, on the consecrated life, he says, all those who are born in Christ are called to live out with the strength which is the Spirit's gift, the chastity appropriate to their state of life, obedience to God and to the church, and a reasonable detachment from material possessions. For all are called to holiness, which consists in the perfection of love. And so I sort of wonder if that little passage there on the universal call to holiness in Lumen Gentium had a little bit of a stamp of St. John Paul II, or his own papacy and his teaching was maybe molded by Lumen Gentium. How exactly that works, we'll never know until we get to eternity. But it's a beautiful thought to consider, especially as we consider our call to holiness, our perfection of charity, imitating the virtues of Mary. Again, we've been thinking about the virtues of Mary as revealed in the mysteries of the Rosary and how they can be ours. And so virtues such as poverty, chastity, and obedience, they make a lot of sense and even become more attractive and seem more attainable if we consider them within Mary. I've already touched upon the virtues of obedience and poverty as found in Mary. As I mentioned earlier, a humble obedience, I think, would be considered Mary's greatest virtue, especially because it allows her to show her love for God by freely sacrificing her will to the Lord, by saying those words, "I am the handmaid of the Lord. Let it be done to me according to your word." It provides us with a wonderful example of how we also can do whatever he tells you. Mary's words at the wedding feast of Cana. Mary's poverty, as revealed in such scenes as the Annunciation, as the Visitation, as the Nativity, demonstrate how the spirit of poverty allows God to do great things in her. And just think of the great things that God can do in us if we weren't so consumed by the world around us. Or even just think of the pearl of great price that we could receive if we weren't so clingy to the, you could say, the dime store beads that are found in the world around us. That we fail to be drawn to the beauty and goodness of God, in which everything else receives its beauty and goodness, because we're caught up with the beauty and goodness of his things. I think of the incredible words of St. Augustine in his Confessions after his conversion, in which he reflects upon that conversion. He says, "Late have I loved you, O beauty ever ancient, ever new. Late have I loved you. You were within me, but I was outside. And it was there that I searched for you. In my unloveliness, I plunged into the lovely things which you created. You were with me, but I was not with you. Created things kept me from you. Yet if they had not been in you, they would not have been at all." And so the virtue of poverty calls us to a holy detachment that opens us up to an even greater love of God and love of our neighbor. And I believe this is revealed most profoundly in the Virgin Mother before the cross. While her poverty is first revealed in the Annunciation, in the Nativity, I think like the Nativity, the swaddling clothes, the manger, no room in the inn. It's at the cross that she is stripped of everything of value. Her joy, her peace, her motherly dignity to see her son as a criminal. Her very flesh and blood in her son. Everything is taken away except her physical life. And so a beautiful thought or consideration of poverty within the Blessed Virgin Mary. And then Mary's chastity is unique because of her vocation as the Mother of God. This vocation calls her to a perpetual virginity. And because of this unique vocation, she takes the three components of chastity to a different level, to another level. The first component of chastity is using conjugal love for its intended end. That is openness to children and the union of spouses and never hindering these intended purposes. But Mary takes this component of chastity to a unique level at the Annunciation when she welcomes the union with a different spouse, the Holy Spirit, and expresses her openness to an incredible child, the Christ child. And again, all of this without the loss of her virginity. The second component of chastity is always treating another person as a person and never as a thing, and also never allowing ourselves to be treated as a thing. St. John Paul II's Theology of the Body offers, I think, a striking contrast that we talk about love And it's opposite. The opposite of love is not hate. But rather the opposite of love is to use. And so chastity is about a love that does not use. And the only exception to this rule is found in Mary. I should say this, the only exception to the rule is found in God and in his love that at times can use us like it used Mary. That God can use us because, well, we're his creatures. We belong to him. Again, we're dirt from which he forms us in his image and likeness. And really any personhood that we have finds its source in him. But also when God uses us, we never lose our personhood. If we use another person, we treat them as a thing. But when God uses us, we remain a person. And actually, God is able to raise our dignity to an even higher level when he uses us. And I think this is expressed in the words of the Blessed Virgin Mary when she says, "For he has looked upon his handmaid's lowliness. Behold, from now on, all ages will call me blessed." And then the third component of chastity is a self-mastery, which involves a mind over matter, involves will over instinct, but most especially it involves grace over concupiscence, that is, the tendency to sin. In the Blessed Virgin Mary, we find the fullness of grace through her Immaculate Conception. The grace that she has received strengthens those virtues within her, the virtues we've been considering over this past weekend, but in particular, that virtue of chastity, so that she did not give in to the concupiscence, that tendency to sin, that she never sinned. And so Mary's virtues of obedience, poverty, and chastity, while being unique for her in a special way, in a very thought-provoking way, it directs our attention and really sheds light on our own unique call to these virtues, whether married, single, widowed, clerical, or religious. All of us have a unique call to these virtues of poverty, chastity, and obedience. And no matter who we are, we need these virtues because we face a battle. Sister Ann Shields this morning was talking about a battle that we face. Well, I think part of the battle is against a consumerism, a hedonism, and a relativism that are so prevalent in our world today. And so the counsels of poverty, chastity, and obedience, they bring us hope. And it almost sounds ironic to consider that they bring us hope. That these are virtues of hope for us, just as they were virtues of hope within the Blessed Virgin Mary. What they do is they direct our attention to something other than the leftovers of this world. That poverty reveals a greater and lasting treasure than the stuff that this world can offer and the stuff that we can consume and always want more. That poverty reveals a greater and lasting treasure. Chastity reminds us that any human relationship is only a foreshadowing of a greater union that the Lord has in store for us. And really, any temptation to reduce conjugal love to a physical pleasure is almost a mockery of true love. And then obedience shows that we cannot save ourselves by sort of a self-determination, but rather it's only through giving our wills that we can receive true freedom. The freedom that Christ offers by he giving up his will. And these evangelical virtues are virtues of hope because they're rooted in the action of Christ, his actions of hope. And again, the hope of the cross. It's been accustomed to meditate upon poverty, chastity, and obedience while praying the first three decades of the Sorrowful Mysteries. That during the first Sorrowful Mystery, we find the supreme act of obedience as Jesus fully accepts the Father's will by accepting his cross. What does he say? Let this cup pass from me, but not my will, but yours be done. During the second Sorrowful Mystery, we're reminded of Christ's bodily mortification, his scourging, that can teach us the virtue of temperance, of that self-mastery, that self-control, especially in areas of purity. During the third Sorrowful Mystery, we find a poverty of spirit revealed in the shame and mockery of the crowning, the stripping of his garments. Really, with Christ, along with Mary, everything's taken away, even his dignity. And so sometime this week, as you pray the Sorrowful Mysteries, ask the Lord and ask Our Lady for a greater understanding of how the evangelical counsels of poverty, chastity, and obedience can be better yours. And again, I believe that we're called to a spirit of poverty. We're called to a chastity that's appropriate to our way of life, and to an obedience, again, to God, to the church. And there's many other opportunities to be obedient in our daily lives. How is the Lord calling you to a more perfect expression of these virtues? And unlike yesterday, where we took time to pray the rosary together, sort of spread out over the day, I'm going to give you the opportunity to pray, whether it be to pray, let's say, the Sorrowful Mysteries that I've just talked about. There's the Glorious Mysteries. I know that as we, later on, for those of part of the Legion of Mary, we have our meeting, we'll pray the Glorious Mysteries together. But with this last little time that we have before our retreat comes to a close, I'd just like to offer you a chance to maybe pick one or two or all five of the mysteries and spend a little bit of time reflecting upon them. And again, what God is calling us to through these particular mysteries. And I'd like to just conclude with a glory be to give thanks to God.